from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Two Bay Area artists join us for the second forum hour. First, we'll meet artist Judith Belzer, who has spent the better part of the past two decades tracing the interplay between organic and manufactured landscapes. She'll join us to discuss her latest series of oil paintings and the ways in which the man-made and the organic fold into one another in our day-to-day lives. Then in the bottom half of the hour, artist Ana Teresa Fernandez, who was born in Mexico, has long been fascinated by U.S.-Mexico border as well as identity and gender. Her first solo exhibition, Foreign Bodies, mixes photography, painted images, and video performance of a horse plunging into water to examine how women's bodies have taken on political and social messages. She'll talk about her work with us. That's next. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome to another hour of this morning's forum program. And in this hour, we're going to meet a couple of local artists who have both are both being featured in terms of exhibitions and who we're going to talk about their work with. But first, we want to remember Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou was a memoirist and a poet who died today at her home in North Carolina at the age of 86, and probably best known certainly for her autobiographical work, Now I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, but also delivering the poem Pulse of the Morning at the inauguration of former President Bill Clinton. She had many San Francisco connections. She actually lived here as a teenager and won a scholarship to study dance and drama at San Francisco's Labor School, and she eventually graduated from Mission High, but dropped out of high school for a time, becoming at 16 the first African-American female cable car conductor in San Francisco. She talked about that in an NPR interview back in March.
My mother had asked me, what would you like to do this semester? You're the head of your class. What would you like to do? You have to work. So I said, I'd like to be a streetcar conductor. She said, all right, go get the job. And she'd drive right behind the streetcar until daylight. And at daylight, she'd honk her horn and blow me a kiss.
And I did an interview back in 2002 with Maya Angelou, which you can listen to just by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. And one of the things that I remember most prominently about that interview was, in the course of the interview, Guy Johnson, her son, who's a well-known author here in the Bay Area, lives in Oakland, called the program. And I had either the foolishness or the temerity to ask him, do you feel in your mother's shadow? And his response was, I'm in her light. And maybe that's a good way to remember her, because she gave a lot of light, and the light continues. As her good friend said earlier today, she will be very, very missed. In the meantime, we're going to meet Judith Belzer, and she's here with us in studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let me say by way of introduction that Judith Belzer is known for her work with, well, landscapes. Actually, she came here about 11 years ago from the East Coast and was doing landscapes out there, and now has sort of tackled, well, the landscapes here in the West Coast, living in Berkeley. I wanted to say also that the work is really quite compelling. It's been called vertiginous. The work is featured in a solo exhibition called Passive Desire, presently at the George Lawson Gallery in San Francisco. And the focus of many of these new paintings, often admired by many, is on the collision of the natural world with the world made by humans. She's also a recent Guggenheim Award winner, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Great to have you, and congratulations on the Guggenheim. This is going to take you, let's talk about this first, because again, it's kind of a landscape connected. It's going to take you to Panama Canal.
Well, I applied for a project that would take me there, and this is really based on the work I've done here in the Bay Area. I live in the hills of Berkeley, and what I see every day is a landscape that's filled with a wild mix of things. It's the natural landscape. I can see the headlands. I can see the bay. And I can also see the Oakland port and oil refinery and the urban grid rushing down to meet the bay in various places. Kind of a wild mashing up of things that are both, you know, these landscapes are all interlaced, but also in some ways clashing with one another. And these kind of landscapes, I realize, are all over the world. And after spending many years of working with the landscape in which I live, and it's these paintings are just based out of my sense experience of living in these places. I'm sort of looking up and out in every way, and was interested in exploring some other places where this is happening. And the Panama Canal is set to reopen after a gigantic expansion. It's supposed to double in capacity, so it seemed like an interesting place to go.
That will be an interesting place. And these paintings that you've done, Passive Desire, that's a kind of, as you've described, a collision between the natural world and the man-made world, and a lot of it has to do with transportation tracking, too.
Well, and the Passive Desire, that's a term that's been used by, actually, urban planners. That's where the term derives, and it was often used to describe different kinds of transportation patterns, but it also refers to pathways that emerge spontaneously, shortcuts that people develop, and, you know, across a quad and a college campus, all kinds of places like that. And as I look out and at this landscape, I'm seeing all kinds of pathways and networks and edge lands and just passageways that refer to and in some way represent our human desires to both explore and to find a way through this landscape, and we're thrusting out into the natural landscape in a way that reflects all our urges to both explore and to find new pathways for our sort of consumer culture.
Well, I look at these paintings, and I said the word vertiginous is often used, but swirling, mesmerizing.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of energy and motion in this landscape, and I'm trying to convey that both with the imagery and with even the kind of way I'm applying the paint. The paint is very...
It's oil painting, mainly.
Yeah, it's all oil painting in this show, and it's got a lot of motion in the mark-making. It's got a lot of light. I find this landscape both exuberant and terrifying at the same time. I think most human experience isn't all one thing or all another thing, and I'm hoping these paintings in some way convey that mixed experience that we have often as we venture out into our lives.
Well, when you talk about light, I know you're in a Berkeley studio with a lot of light. That's made a whole difference in your color palette, hasn't it?
It has been. It's been really interesting. I moved here about 11 years ago, but we only thought we were going to be staying a short time, so I was sort of working temporarily in all kinds of places. I said, I'll work here, I'll work there. I was working in a spare bedroom in a lower level of our house. And finally, after realizing we were going to be here, I got a studio and finally have enough space to really spread out. And I think it has, and there is a tremendous amount of natural light in this space, which probably has had a big effect on the work.
Talking to Judith Belzer, who is an artist, Paths of Desire, new paintings will be on exhibit at the George Lawson Gallery. You can see it through the 31st of May, extending beyond that maybe?
I don't think so.
No? So
rush on over.
Yeah, get on over there. And I mean, this is really very personal response to Bay Area landscapes. I mean, a lot of what you're doing is sort of, I think the old world is dendrology, is with trees and with sort of using trees as kind of encompassing almost, I think you described it, getting a cellular level of trees.
Right. Well, the work when I first came out here, I did a series of work that had to do with the live oak trees, because when I got out here, I was so overwhelmed with the scale of the landscape, having come from New England and working there for a long time, where you're sort of at a one-to-one ratio with the landscape. I came out here and suddenly I felt completely shrunken in size and overwhelmed. And the idea of painting mountains or the ocean was completely overwhelming. So the trees are the other vertical standing in the landscape that I somehow could relate to. And they're also, the live oak trees were incredibly animate and moving through the space in a really interesting way. And having come from New England, where the trees seem to stand there girded, waiting through, getting through the winter, and they seem much more inert in many ways in the landscape, here we have these very active, very animate elements in the landscape. So I worked with them for a while, and then I moved on to eucalyptus, which is a tree that carries a lot of mixed meaning in the Bay Area. It carries the threat of fire, and it's a big
It's transplanted.
Right. But it's also a beautiful tree and very majestic. So it carries many meanings, which drew me to it as an image. And as I worked on the bark, looking at the bark, and gradually I started piercing through the bark and right into the insides of the trees and thinking about what's going on, the life inside the trees. I'm trying to invite people to think about how nature is very active and roiling, not this inert thing that you save for the weekends and go visit, but it's very involved in our everyday lives. And as I went further and further in, and I started to detect structure in the patterning in the wood grain, that sort of took me to built environment. As soon as you find structure, you start to think about all kinds of structures. And it led me to look up and out after having looked very, very close up and having these very intimate views of nature. I realized I could consider our relationship with nature in a whole new way here in the Bay Area, just based on what I was seeing and feeling as I walked in the hills in Berkeley and Tilden Park.
Yeah, there's something very anatomical about your work. It's a word I'd hesitate to use, but you know, there's a greater sense, I guess you've described, of intimacy of the landscapes in New England than there is here, because it's so expansive and you got the hills and everything else. You know?
Right. As I say, the forms, the views, everything about it is on a much larger scale. So you start to sense yourself in the landscape in a different way. And, you know, because of the natural geography here, you do have this sense of sweeping up and down kind of spaces that is rather vertiginous. You're looking down from the hills, you see part of the landscape is flattened out and becomes an abstract pattern, and you just swivel your eyes up and you get this gigantic illusionistic kind of space. You get two different senses of space without barely moving your eyes.
So, isn't that like being a crop duster, you've said?
George at the gallery, he used that term to describe it. So I feel very much an observer of this landscape, but it's very much about what it feels like to be in it too. I don't make drawings. I don't take photographs. The paintings are really come out of just the experience of what it feels like to be here.
Talking with Judith Belzer, who is an artist, her Passive Desire new paintings on exhibit at the George Lawson Gallery through May the 31st. And be interested in hearing, these are paintings which show how much landscapes have been transformed by, well, humankind's industriousness,
That's
I suppose.
Right.
So be interested in hearing some thoughts from listeners about, and you don't have to be a painter or an artist to weigh in here, about how landscapes differ just in terms of the way you see them. I mean, I'm talking about what you see and what you experience through seeing, as opposed to, say, an Eastern landscape or landscapes here in the West, and particularly in relationship or in collision with the world as it's made, with all of its industry and patterns. And, of course, it's an opportunity for you to talk to an artist who has certainly distinguished herself already with the career that's made its way and will make its way to other geographical terrain, such as the Panama Canal. Anyway, this is an interactive program, so you can feel free to join us at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786. We do welcome calls, any questions or comments. Like I say, particularly like to hear from some other fledgling artists or artists who like to paint nature, but also those of you who have some thoughts about the collision of nature with landscapes, and also about the difference in landscapes, how you perceive, for example, landscape out here as opposed to the East Coast. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We mentioned body parts here in the trees and also reading sand dunes, rock formations, all kinds of things.
Well, I really hope to keep these paintings very open and evocative to other people's experiences too. I don't mean them to be – I am concerned about what's going on in our environment and in how we're handling our landscapes and how we're thrusting ourselves into them. But I also find them to be beautiful and exuberant, as I mentioned. And I really don't want, though, to be programmatic or to tell people what to think. I want them to be open and evocative, and I think that they did derive from my work in trees. So they have a lot of different elements. You know, I've been working for a long time, and a lot of different experiences feed into this work, and including, you know, a response to how landscape has been handled historically in landscape in painting.
And, talk about that for a moment.
Yeah,
I mean, how that's impressed upon you.
I've thought a lot about pressing against various landscape conventions in painting and in art in general. These paintings, in particular, are pretty much, I think, all the work in this series are close to it, are in a square format, which right away sort of presses against what we tend to think of as a horizontal, stretched out way to look at the landscape. And it's really because I want to get at that intense energy and motion, and it seems like that's a different kind of format to work in that responds to this kind of energy that I'm interested in. And that
I felt like I was being pulled into these
paintings. Pulled in. And it's unclear often whether the force is human or natural, and where those, you know, who's winning what, or if this is a battle, what is the battle? And, you know, I think that we've set ourselves up in a situation that is precarious in various ways. And the sense of looking from above and almost falling into the landscape, I'm hoping you know, helps to convey this precarious situation that we find ourselves in. And historically, landscape paintings have had a foreground, a middle ground, and a background with a very specific pathway through the landscape to take you through and to tell you exactly how you should travel through. These works, and I've never really had a horizon line in my paintings, they're really sometimes unclear or a little ambiguous where you are in the space and not really giving you a predetermined path through which to travel. So I'm suggesting that there are
You're
many different
ways.
You're
getting some collaboration from your viewers on this.
Yeah, and exactly. And I hope that people, I find that people have wildly different responses to a single work, which I consider to be a good thing.
I think is a very good thing. Let's find out from some of our listeners what's on their minds. Lindsay, hi, you're on the air. Oh, Lindsay, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hi, sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just had a quick question about, you talked about how she doesn't use photographs or drawings. And so I was wondering if memory or she sees memory as playing a big role in her paintings.
Memory is an interesting thing. I definitely think it plays a role in the work. As I said, walking is a big part of my art practice, actually. And I spend a lot of time outside. And really what it feels like and what I look at definitely comes into my work. And it's not always a direct line. Memory is a funny thing. Different memories pop up and come into your work in surprising ways. It's unpredictable, but it's definitely a part of the way I work.
And we thank you for the call, and we'll hear from another listener, and that's you, Meredith. Hi.
Hi. I am also from New England originally, and when I moved out here, one of the first things that I really noticed as being really different was the light. I felt like the light was, like, I don't know, maybe more in the white scale. And I was just curious. I've been out here for 3 years now, and I've been wondering if that was just me or if that's something that you perceived as well. So.
Yeah, the light is very different. I find it harsh in a way. In New England, there's a lot of moisture in the air, which I think softens the light, sometimes in sort of dull ways, actually. But it is a big factor. But for me, the thing that was the most compelling in terms of my work had to do with, as I discussed, the shift in scale. But light definitely factors in. It's very, you see the edges of everything so clearly because of the lack of moisture in the air, I think.
So when you're walking, are you thinking of the painting, conceiving the painting, or are you just absorbing?
No, I really just try to be open when I'm walking around looking. As I say, I really never know what's going to exactly come into the work. So that really happens in the studio, and the paintings change a lot in the process of working as well.
But you've made clear that what you're really interested in a lot of this is the relationship between nature and culture.
That's right. I am. But, you know, making art is a funny thing. You don't the ideas and the words often, the sort of formulation of how you speak about it come afterwards. And the work is very much about the process and the paintings themselves. And, you know, the imagery and the way I'm making these paintings, the nature of the paint, which is very thin and very, there's a lot of drawing. You know, the painting is really important too. So these things evolve together and over time. And I don't set out to make a particular image when I go to work. It just doesn't work that way for me.
The image occurs once you're at the easel then. I mean,
yeah,
once you start making lines.
The paintings really start in a very spontaneous kind of way. And my work is one painting leads to the other, leads to the other. This is part of a long life process for me. And I don't feel that one painting sort of sums it all up or says it all for the moment. That would be too daunting to even try. But this is, for me, it's an organic process of developing these ideas, developing these ways of painting, developing how I want the nature of the color and the quality of the paint itself. This is an ongoing and ever-evolving process.
I noticed you recently had a discussion, I believe it was open to the public, with a friend of mine, whom many listeners probably know, Bob Haas, who is also Poet Laureate of the United States.
Yes, great talking to him.
Lofty title. Yeah, what were you two talking about? Because he's so interested in nature and his poetry. Yeah.
Right. Well, I was...
And landscapes. Yeah,
we met at my studio a couple of times, which was really fun. I've met Bob a couple of times before, and it was really interesting to speak to him about it. He had specific ideas and about, you know, he has spent a lot of time thinking about these issues. But curiously, when we got to do the talk, we were doing it at the art practice school at Cal, he just started looking at the work, and I kept on waiting for him to jump in, and he was sort of he would sort of riff off looking at the work. It was a lot of fun.
He was probably somewhat mesmerized by the work.
Well,
that's
the
effect
it had
on me.
He had seen the work I had done with trees, and I think he was shocked to see such a profound development that's happened over the last few years.
Let me bring another caller in here, and that's Maria. Good morning.
Good morning. I was going to tell you about my first experience with California. I came from New York to Oakland with the California Zephyr, ancient times. And as I saw the hills, which were already golden in July, they looked like giant creatures, animals with golden silky fur, giant dinosaurs that sleep. And each paw extended into a giant golden back, the hillside, that looked like a sleeping body of an extinct creature.
I agree completely. I have felt the hills feel very much like animals. They look like it feels like skins. And it's part of one of the ways in which this landscape feels incredibly animate to me.
Well, you have a similar artistic sensibility or vision of things. Thank you for the call. And I can see that, especially up like around Tilden Park, where you sometimes walk, I imagine, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. you live in Berkeley.
Yeah.
Or in the Sierras, you know, for that matter.
That landscape, as well as the Oakland Port, equally active.
That's right. You walk around the Oakland Port, too. We'll go to an Oakland caller next, and that's Hanaro. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm an artist myself. I'm a visual artist, a performing artist, a musician, and gardener. And I don't obviously have time to do all the things I love, but I just want to say how important nature is in artwork and how I rarely buy a painting or rarely buy any artwork that is not nature-related. And I wanted to say thanks for keeping up the work and this is a great program. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the call, and keep up your work. And here's Stephen, who writes, one reason I don't care for eucalyptus from an aesthetic standpoint is they tend to obscure the beautiful natural contours of our hilly landscapes. The native oaks and other vegetation tend to be low and sparse, allowing the shapes of the hills to be clearly seen. Eucalyptus tend to grow tall and dense, making areas where they grow all look the same.
Well, as I say, it's a controversial tree, but it is part of our culture. We brought these trees here to help build the railroads. They turned out to be unsuccessful in that regard, but they reflect a lot of our urge to develop the landscape. So they're here, and they are interesting to look at.
And as we said before, you can jump on seeing this exhibit. It's there till May 31st at the George Lawson Gallery, Passive Desire, New Paintings by Judith Belzer. What's next for you?
Keep on working. I have a show. I'll be in a group show in Chicago this summer called Outside Disco. I love that title, at Valerie Carberry Gallery. And I'll start working on my Panama project.
Well, good luck on both scores.
Thanks.
Do we have time for maybe a quick call? Can you do it quick, Peter? Hi.
Yeah. Do you try and depict any of the areas where humans have had like a really visual impact on the landscape, like some of the old industrial areas around the Bay Area, or like, I don't mean just strip malls, but like some of the newer,
absolutely,
I don't know, Silicon Valley somehow.
That's a big part of this work, and I find it incredibly beautiful in many ways. And you see a lot of order and pattern in that. That is, in some way, I'm looking for the connections between the natural and the built environment, not just the contrasts. And I'm very interested in the structures and the networks and the patterning, again, that you find in the industrial landscape in very mundane places. These aren't special places that I'm making paintings about. This is the thing. These are the places we pass by every day. And yes, I'm a big fan of the industrial landscape, actually. I'm very engaged by it.
Well, we're going to meet another artist in the second segment of this hour, Ana Teresa Fernandez, another local artist. And she, too, takes on a lot of the history and really also for lack of a better word, the spirit of places that you might not normally associate with, like taking a horse into a sinkhole in Mexico. But we'll hear about that when we return. Judith Belzer, so good to have.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Great to have you. When we return, stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.